I'm here with returning guest Michael S. Judge, host of Death is Just Around the Corner. And do you want to plug your Twitter account too, or do you rather not?
Oh yeah, that's fine.
At Corpse in Orbit.
Yeah, there she goes.
So we're going to talk about something which I feel like is a mandatory podcast topic in the summer of 2019, and that is the Jeffrey Epstein case, which I guess in a sense is over because he's dead under very curious circumstances. The latest sort of headline from the Miami Herald, which broke some of the most important stories that got this prosecution happening in this sort of ongoing elite sex trafficking case, was that the victims had held a press conference, and they, even though Epstein is dead, they didn't really get into the questions around the death, but they said they would still like to see his accomplices prosecuted, and that had itself didn't get much coverage. So in some ways, the Jeffrey Epstein case is now one for researchers and historians, because I don't expect it to take the headlines back over again. Although I could be wrong, but I think it's sort of going to be moving to the background. And why even talk about it when there's so much other stuff happening? With this kind of stuff I usually cover on this show, from fascist paramilitaries to climate change. I think that whatever actually happened with his death, I was right out of the gate the night that some of that news came out, saying that it looked to me more like a mob hit than a suicide, and that was the failed attempt back a month before he actually died. So I've been not really doing a lot of contributions to the sort of online research since then, but followed it fairly closely. And I think the things that have come out most recently, that the cameras were out in the hall. I mean, it's all just incredibly suspicious. And the other element that is still really not fronted the way it should be in most of the mainstream press coverage is who this white guy was, how he got his job, and the purported intelligence connections. So to me, I mean, I stand by what I said, the night of his first either suicide attempt or murder attempt, depending what you believe. I stand by what I said then, that this is comparable to Lee Harvey Oswald saying he's a patsy and then getting assassinated on television, except of course the cameras were out. So I this is a massive I guess parapolitical scandal, which even if it falls out of the headlines day to day, is going to be talked about well for as long as we're still talking about these things.
Yeah, I think you make an interesting point there, that the use of the word parapolitical and that other nations, particularly it seems to me European nations in the late 20th century, have had to live with knowledge of scandals and make common reference to them in, their modern politics, like Pei Due and the Masonic Lodge and the Banco Ambrosiano in Italy, or Gladio all over Europe, or the pedophile scandals in the House of Lords that have happened over and over in Britain. They acknowledge these things as existing parts of their politics, as things that it is acceptable to make reference to in the course of, say, an election. Whereas we don't do that. We don't want to do that. We want to clean things up, decide what happened, and then sweep the shit away forever and never, ever, ever talk about it again. Whereas something like the Dutroux affair in Belgium, they still haven't really formed a government after that. And that was almost 20 years ago, because everyone they keep trying to bring up to be the leader of a new government, turns out he had some involvement in it. You know, this is right front and center for them. Whereas if let's say, I'm trying to think of someone who seems like she would actually do it. Like if Tulsi Gabbard brought up Lee Harvey Oswald at the next presidential debate, it would immediately be like, oh, she's disqualified. She's crazy. You know, this is a conspiracy theorist, and we can't have this kind of thing in the White House. Hasn't Trump already done enough to light the fires of conspiracy, blah, blah, bullshit? So other nations have to live with the realm of what you, I think, rightly call the parapolitical, and just let it, if not control their politics, then certainly exert an ambient influence on their politics. I mean, you know, Silvio Berlusconi is back in Italian politics after everything that everyone knows about him. Whereas we try to, you know, we literally call commissions that feature among their membership the people who probably planned assassinations. And then within, 6 months, we have them issue an official verdict, and that's it. And the politesse of the situation dictates that we never talk about it again, except to talk about it as, you know, a horrible tragedy that we can have TV shows about on the 20th and, you know, 30th and 40th and 50th anniversaries.
Yeah, except this isn't the kind of case that would have anniversary episodes, you know. I mean, I guess, you know, I wouldn't rule it out. You know, he's saying sort of Manson nostalgia,
yeah.
Manson family nostalgia these days. But, you know, as to what you said about not wanting to talk about it, you know, one of the interesting things about the way that this Epstein story has developed, particularly, you know, since his death, or specifically about his death, you saw outlets like the New York Times come out and basically say, you know, any questions about this are conspiracy theories right out of the gate. And which was bizarre and totally premature, because, you know, every time that something happened since he'd been in prison, you know, whether it was the first attempt on his life or slash suicide attempt or the second successful one, you had conflicting stories coming out of from different news organizations with different sets of sources inside the prison. So that's highly indicative that somebody was lying. So the fact that, you know, certain, let's just say establishment outlets, for lack of a better word, came out and really tried to define a narrative that, you know, was at odds with many of the, you know, initially reported and subsequently reported facts, was very bizarre. And then you saw, you know, as more strange details kept coming out, like the fact that, oh, the guards were asleep, and oh, he was taken off suicide watch, and then the medical examiner's report, and oh, this one bone was broken in his neck that basically it sounds like it would have been almost impossible for him to break it if he had hung himself with these flimsy sheets that he was provided or whatever. But it's very common bone to break in strangulation cases, for instance. So as more of these kind of details came out, you saw, you know, those sort of establishment sources and outlets kind of walking it back a little bit and being a little more skeptical and allowing more questions. The Miami Herald, I think, notably, probably the most important newspaper covering this, doesn't really characterize his death one way or the other. I mean, they just say he died in prison and then give a couple of details, but they don't say suicide or alleged assault or what. They're very careful, which I think is warranted. But, you know, it's I think what's different about this case so far, at least in the way it's playing out, is that those kind of establishment outlets that try to say anything contrary to the official, you know, story slash cover up is a conspiracy theory, they have had to be put on the defensive, basically.
Yeah, that the detail about the broken bone was, amid all this evidence, the thing that really spooked me out, because one of the other ongoing, you know, parapolitical horror stories of the recent decades that I've paid a fair amount of attention to is the mass murder of women in the north of Mexico, especially in Ciudad Juárez. And I've read enough accounts of those deaths to know that in virtually every instance of a woman being strangled, the fracture of the hyoid bone was the way the police determined strangulation. That's like the sign. I mean, it's at the same way finding a bullet in your chest is a pretty good sign that you were shot in the chest. Breaking this bone is, the sign that you were strangled. And it's not that I believed before that a coke running, cop who was in jail for quadruple murder was incapable of performing and failing, especially a hit on him.
You're talking about Epstein's cellmate Nicholas Tartaglione, a crooked cop who was in that prison for murdering four Latin American guys, I guess.
Yeah.
And it was
Yeah.
represented by a mob lawyer, at several of his court appearances. So, a crooked cop in a from a crooked situation, which is
Yeah.
one of the other things hanging over this. So, you were making that connection in light of the strangulation evidence.
Yeah, I mean, a guy who, if you ever seen Tartaglione, has a very much the steroid kind of look. And who, my favorite part of his case is that he tried to bury these four people that he killed in his backyard as if it was like a Far Side cartoon or something. Like, this is what you do when you fucking kill people. Yeah, come on. That like having been a cop, he didn't have any better knowledge of body disposal than that. So that having already happened and there already being evidence that someone had tried to strangle him, the idea that the same person or indeed a different person was paid to do it again, seems exceedingly likely.
Yeah, well, and he had Tartaglione had been the recipient of a contraband cell phone not long after Epstein was admitted to that facility,
Was
which.
the day, in fact, he got his phone the day it was ruled that 2,000 pages of Epstein records, naming a bunch of his alleged clients and co-conspirators, had to be unsealed.
Yeah, which could I mean I pointed that out in this Twitter thread I did as that stuff was breaking. And I think that's lost to because I auto delete my tweets and I think the thread is gone. I might have archived somewhere, and if I do, I'll try to piece it together for the show notes because it has a lot of links to these strange characters. Like Tartaglione and their backgrounds. But I mean, the picture that it seemed to me was sort of forming around all that was, mob infiltration in upstate, small town departments, and probably throughout this federal correctional facility as
Yeah.
well. Because if this was a setup, that would require some inside people to make arrangements, and certainly not unheard of. It's not like the kind of thing that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Some
And
inside people who had connections, like, say, the former senator from the state of New York.
yeah, or more likely Giuliani. I mean, who whose dad was connected and has been ever since he joined the Trump administration pretty flagrant about running around making deals with international mobsters.
Yeah.
So and plus there's the whole history with Giuliani and other prosecutors, some factional rivalry that is pretty serious out of the Southern District of New York. So I'm not, I mean, a lot of people jump toward Clinton body count sort of thing. I just don't think there's any evidence that particularly points in that direction over any other. And as far as I'm looking at it, the
Yeah, I don't.
evidence is pretty strong that perhaps this was an assassination in federal prisons. Again, not the kind of thing that hasn't happened before. But as far as who would have paid for that to happen or arranged for that to happen, who knows? That's the thing about Epstein. I mean, he was a blackmail artist who had successfully entrapped a wide swath of the most powerful people in the world in politics, business. I mean, even to say that he is intelligence connected or mafia connected, I mean, it starts to be very murky what we're even talking about in that sense. I mean, when I say parapolitical, I guess I'm talking about that sort of twilight area where the CIA and the mafia are the same thing, you know,
I
or
mean,
not just the CIA, but any sort of intelligence operation. It's really. It's not like you can draw a firm line in some of these cases. And that's, again, why it's sort of comparable to the JFK case in terms of its complexity and murkiness.
I mean, there are certainly situations in which, let's say, the CIA and Mossad are functionally the same thing, and it bears mentioning that this probably is the person that maybe the most people have ever wanted dead in modern history. So there are a lot of candidates. The only reason I mentioned the Clintons, and I can't remember who said this, so I'm sorry that I can't give them credit, but that someone said immediately after the first attempt on Twitter that the best evidence that this was the Clintons is that they completely fucked it up.
Oh, like the first time.
Yeah.
I mean, who like again, I think that's like maybe they fucked it up. You know, my thought with that first incident was maybe it was a warning, you know, of some kind. And it still might have been, and maybe, you know, something we don't know about, a warning was ignored. You know, there's just too many things that we don't know and might never know. Because much like these cameras that went out, you know, evidence kind of tends to disappear with cases like this. Plus, you know, all the sort of press taboos that are around it, as you alluded to earlier. But let's talk about those intelligence connections on Epstein's part, because there's at least one that is without a doubt matter of, you know, record, and that is his informant arrangement with the FBI. And there is another one which is highly suspect, and that is his hiring at the Dalton School, sort of, you know, Masters of the Universe prep school on the Upper East Side of New York, hired to be a teacher there, which
With no
with no college degree and no evident qualifications, by the father of the current attorney general, a guy named Donald Barr, who was also a veteran of the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, which was the precursor to the CIA and active in World War II. So that's a possible old boy CIA connection there. Although who knows? There's a lot. We just don't know anything about his relationship with Barr, or you know, Barr's job in the OSS. I could be wrong. Do you know about those things?
No, the only thing I sort of, when we talked about doing the show, went around canvassing among the people I know who know the most of this to say, do you have any idea about that specifically, about how he goes from this kind of fuck up who's dropped out of Cooper Union twice to getting this extremely prestigious job where not only did he totally lack qualifications, but behaved inappropriately around female students and like wasn't censured, let alone fired, had sort of bizarrely his run of the place. And the only thing that anyone I talked to could put a finger on is that Epstein himself, you may know this, has or had a special lodge at a camp called Interlaken. You
Now
may have heard of
this
this.
this was like a this was like another one of these elite summer camp type things or something, right?
Right, it's
Or an
for
art school, or is this the same as the art school?
Yeah, it's for like musically talented children to
Okay.
go to in the summer. It's some of my friends went when I was a kid. I almost went. Epstein had his own cabin at Interlaken, which is very weird, him surrounded by all these, 14 and 15-year-olds. And Epstein himself went to Interlaken as a student when he was 14, I believe, playing the piano.
Oh, I didn't realize that. So his parents were pretty humble, like a teacher and a parks maintenance guy.
So if he went to Interlaken, that would suggest either that he was, really, really a prodigy, and later evidence about that suggests that that is not true. I remember people talking about how at his parties he would inevitably want to play piano, and he would just sort of do something really, basic, and they'd all go, "That's lovely, Jeffrey. Can we eat?" So either he was, a true child prodigy, which seems unlikely, or there was some other reason for him to be at Interlaken. And if in his adult days, there were weird motherfuckers with cabins with and records of child molestation just hanging around that camp, there may have been people like that in the days when he attended as a 14 or 15-year-old as well.
Right.
So the only thing I can suggest about his sort of marking out for any kind of position later is that there may be some kind of interlocking network or list of people who have either been sort of marked out as good material or who have already been, abused in one way or another.
So, what was the direction that connection was going in for you? Just that perhaps Barr was aware of that network, or this was how that came about, or what?
Yeah, the Interlaken is enough of a, an exclusive sort of institution that the kind of person who was, in tight with the Dalton School would be interested in who was there. And I suppose, this is going completely into the speculative, but old OSS man, no doubt with some friends at the CIA, and I know it sounds completely conspiratorial, but the more I read about systematic or ritual child abuse in this country, the harder it gets to completely rule out the hand of something like MK Ultra in almost every case, even if it's tertiary, quaternary, even if the people directly involved have no idea about it. It's incredible how often it gets back to that.
So the completely all caveats given speculation is that Epstein may have been a product or perhaps a participant in MK Ultra. Is that or a successor program, a related program?
Some sort of program that was either related to it or that followed on from it or that was working with results of its experimentation, whether or not they were still calling the thing MK Ultra by the point I'm talking about, I've got no idea.
You're just sort of
It's
using
just
it as shorthand for sort of conditioning and behavioral control sort of research and programs.
And it's really, really incredible how often you find that at the root of people who later commit notable violent or horrific acts, and especially people whose violent or horrific acts have to do with child abuse. There is some connection there.
So you're suggesting that there is a potential motive for the abuse, which itself is often lost in the conversation, right? I mean, like I said earlier, the victims had this press conference, and it's kind of like, what? Who are they? Okay. And so you're suggesting there may be a reason or a purpose or motive for the abuse beyond just sort of violent, rapey urges by these like predatory, horrible people.
Yeah, this is part of what I was talking about when I was talking earlier to you about historical background for this kind of thing. Because I remember listening to outing myself here, listening to Come Town, and hearing Stav say, "What the fuck? Like, do this many people really want to fuck kids?" And thinking about that question, did this many people really want to fuck kids? And looking throughout history at how often predatory behavior toward children is the sort of summit act, the act that seals you as a member of the absolute power elite, the group than which there is nothing higher. And we have this not only now with Epstein, but with recent problems the mafia and Vatican have had that led to the election of Francis as the pontiff, to the Dutroux case in Belgium that's, lasted forever. And you go back and back and back and back, and ritual sexual abuse of kids is so often the kind of sign. It's the sort of the ring people put on, not necessarily because they want to have sex with kids, although I'm sure some of them do. I'm sure for some of them it's just purely carnal evil. But I think for a certain number of them, and it's got to be just judging from the numbers of, pedophiles in the population, I would think a majority are close to it. For a good number of people, it must be less, actual sexual interest in children than the confirmation that I am now part of the highest and most elite circle that exists within my society. And the way I know that for absolute certain is that I have seen the other members of that circle do the thing that outside this tiny cynical is judged to be the worst, most awful thing you could do. And they've all seen me do it too. We
Just
have
been
a
thinking
bond.
of David Cameron fucking a pig
Exactly.
the
Exactly. Yeah, that it's
Allegedly.
a much more. I don't think you even have to put allegedly on that one. I think he just admitted it.
It was more complicated than that, but anyway, go on.
That, I mean, that's exactly it. That these goofy, weird frat boy rituals you hear about with, Skull and Bones, for example, that you have to masturbate in a coffin in front of every living Skull and Bones member while naming everyone you've ever had sex with. Okay, that's fucking weird. But it is a fairly benign version when put next to, having sex with children. And I think it is just an amplified version of more or less the same thing. It is a ritual, your involvement in which seals you to secrecy and brotherhood with the other people who have partaken in the ritual because they know it about you and you know it about them. And you can even take a kind of joy, not necessarily in having done it, or I should say, not necessarily in doing it, but in having done it. In the fact that you're able to get away with this shit. You are on a level of society where you can do this, and literally everyone who could stop you is also in this room doing it.
So is that the class analysis? The elite of the elite can be designated by their transgressions.
I
So,
think so.
yeah.
The name Carl Schmitt?
It rings a bell. Please elaborate.
He is, I think I may have talked about him on my show before, I can't remember, but he was a Nazi jurist who was tasked with the, strange job of coming up with laws and legal definitions in a regime that often seemed, to run on the lack of laws. And he was a brilliant guy. He just happened to be a thoroughly evil Nazi as well. And watching his sort of logical convolution solutions as he tries to come up with these legal definitions is fascinating. And at a certain point, he gets to the question of sovereignty. He has to answer, what is sovereignty in the political sense? And his answer is that sovereignty is the right to decide upon the state of exception. The sovereign is the one who can decide when an exception should be made or can be made or is being made. And I think what is going on at these gatherings is a sort of celebration of the right of exception. These people are getting together to partake in the fact that no one can tell them not to do this. They are the sovereigns who are in charge of the right of exception for, you know, each their given societies, because we have people from dozens of countries here, and they each go home to decide for their societies where exception lies, who may be accepted, who lies outside of the law. And of course, the first answer to all this is generally them, and then they dispose of other people and their right to exception as they find prudent or convenient.
That's well put. The it reminds me of the, you know, I'm conjuring images of you know, medieval aristocrats hunting their peasantry, you know, for sport and things like yeah. that. It certainly also comports with my experience of rich people's behavior. So, you know, I imagine as you go up the wealth and power scale, then it becomes a bit hard to fathom for yeah. the, you know, if you're not really engaged in, you know, a sort of depravity contest.
Yeah, you're right, absolutely. Being around rich people, there's this weird atmosphere of just like, oh, we don't have to do that. Oh, we don't have to worry about that. You know, that like sort of people who finish eating or drinking something and then just like drop the cup or the bag on the floor. And you say, aren't you going to pick that up? And they say, oh no, someone does that.
Yeah, you know, I had that exact experience in India when I was living there with a rich student who actually, I think I spilled and I bent to pick it up. He said, oh no, we have, you know, let the help do that. Let the low caste yeah. people do that. And you know, it's if you're not of that group, it's sort of hard to imagine how you get in that mentality. So I think that part of what makes the details and just what, you know, not even the speculation that we've been engaging in, but just what's known about what happened with this guy and, you know, with the people that entered his orbit for whatever reason is just so like utterly depraved. That, you know, most people when they see it are just like, that's the face of evil, right? Like they can't get their head around, you know, what would drive a person to behave this way. Because I do think, I mean, it seems to be out of proportion, with, the sort of, surveyed, you know, tendencies for abuse or pedophilia or whatever in the general population, right? It is like you were saying, like, this is more than just people who are wired that way or, you know, abused into being that way. Although I think, you know, raising the prospect that maybe Epstein was abused at this camp that he had a connection to, I mean, it does sort of bring up the generational aspects of it. I always wanted to do like, I don't know whether some historical fiction or in any event, some seriously researched piece of work about upper class socialization of their children, you know, and I started thinking about that, you know, when details of the upbringing of people like David Cameron and Boris Johnson were in the news when I was living in the UK. Because you're right to point out the similarities with that and the Catholic Church abuse. I mean, I think, you know, whatever it is, or it may be more than one thing, I think it is right to point out that there's some secondary or additional purpose to the abuse and the crimes that were committed here.
Dude, that entire world of the English upper class and of the, you know, immigrant to England upper class, sending their kids away to top level boarding schools and knowing, I mean, knowing, not guessing or being worried, but being certain that their children are going to be abused, probably both by each other and, you know, older children, and by their teachers or some authority figure at the school. And just sort of saying, well, you know, part of growing up, one's got to learn to deal with these things and to bury them as far down as one can. Yes, you know that a society running on that cannot help but do insane things. A society in which every powerful upper class male is just desperately trying not to think about that all the time. I mean, that is going to give rise to a kind of, you know, secretly traumatized power caste who are going to be secretly taking disproportionate revenge for something they can never talk about. You know,
So,
that's insane.
this is a great segue to a question, a listener request, which was why is Ghislaine Maxwell still walking free? And since we already crossed the Atlantic, I thought that was a good time to bring her up.
That's an excellent question.
Can you give a little, if not, that's fine, but could you give a little sort of capsule on who that is?
Yeah, so you sort of have to start with her father. Although that gets very, very strange as well. Her father is known as a figure in modern British history, but he's actually not British. He was a Czech Jew whose name was Jan something, and who escaped what's now the Czech Republic for Britain during World War II, and because of that, you know, had this intense British nationalism for the country that saved him for the rest of his life. And he changed his name to Robert Maxwell, and first became very, very rich in a sort of like Rupert Murdochian role. He ran a bunch of scandal sheets and right-wing tabloids. And then at one point, there was some sort of, you know, an MP says, if Mr. Maxwell thinks he could run the country better than I can, perhaps he should do it himself. And Robert Maxwell decided, blimey, perhaps I should do it myself. So he actually became a Minister of Parliament for 5 years. And then after he died, he had a full state funeral in Israel because it turned out that while he was a newspaper baron and a minister of parliament in all his professional roles, he was also a spy for the Mossad, and he was feeding them all the information he thought might be useful, and died in a very weird way, falling off a yacht in the middle of nowhere, a yacht that was then sold to Adnan Khashoggi, who some of you may know as one of the money men in the Iran-Contra scandal, and who then sold the yacht himself to Donald Trump. The President of the United States is the current owner of this yacht. And the name of the yacht is the Lady Ghislaine, for his daughter Ghislaine Maxwell. And I can only guess from the way he talked about her, but all the sort of tired lib jokes about Trump wanting to sleep with Ivanka. I mean, it for Robert and Ghislaine Maxwell, it was like that times 10. Like he really talked in bizarre, inappropriate ways about her. It really seemed as though he either wanted to abuse or had abused her at some point.
That's a piece of context I did not know.
Yeah, it's if you look up Robert Maxwell on Ghislaine Maxwell, he was a creep. Yeah. So at some point, Actually, this gets even more twisted, but Robert Maxwell is a part of a group of people who, in theory, are giving charitably to Israel. The group was called the Mega Group, which is just a zero effort name for a group. And it included the Bronfman family, who owned, I think still own, Seagram's Gin. And they used to own BMG, the record label that then became Sony BMG. Lots of very, very rich people. I have no idea whether they were actually giving their money to Israel or if they were using I'm giving money to Israel as the classic money laundering gambit that it's always been. But in theory, anyway, they were a pro-Israeli charitable organization. And Epstein somehow worked his way into the good graces of this group, became kind of their gopher and errand boy. And Robert Maxwell decided, oh, I logged that bloody Epstein. So they became close over the course of the 80s, and it's been theorized that Epstein was already turning over evidence to the CIA by this point. And of course, Maxwell was definitely already turning things over to Mossad by this point. So they may have been exchanging information between the two agencies. And Ghislaine Maxwell sort of became Jeffrey Epstein's only adult female companion. For a while. I think they may have actually been engaged. I'm not sure about that, but they definitely, to the outward, to the social, you know, world, especially in New York, they gave the impression of being a couple. But Epstein was never really romantically involved with her. She was just his best friend, in large part because she was an excellent procuress. She was really good at finding girls for his parties and for him to virtually sell to other people, because she could, come on a lot softer than a creepy ass middle-aged man could. You know, the at one point, Epstein was working for, this is an entirely different story, but working for the Victoria's Secret catalog, and just having Jeffrey Epstein sort of storming into the room and saying, "All right, let's do this," versus a woman not that far from these girls' own age being able to sort of sweet talk them through the process. He found that latter ability incredibly useful. So for as long as he lived, Ghislaine Maxwell was his second in command. All kinds of photos of them together. And recently, you may have seen there were two bizarre stories.
Oh yes,
One of
please get into that, because it gets to do with her current whereabouts, and some other weird loose ends. So yeah, go off.
One of them says she has a new boyfriend who is a I think a Silicon Valley guy. And is living in a mansion in Manchester by the Sea, Massachusetts, which is very weird because this boyfriend, God, I wish I could remember his name. He's got a really dopey ass name. He is a member, for some reason that no one can explain, of the Council for Foreign Relations. Jeffrey Epstein was a member, for reasons that nobody can explain, of the Council for Foreign Relations. And in various members of that council, including most prominently Larry Summers, were excellent friends of Jeffrey Epstein. So this story comes out saying, no, she's alone and living a private life in Massachusetts, and she has no desire to be disturbed and doesn't have anything to do with the court case. She's a private citizen. Leave her alone, basically. All of which, even if she, really is living in Massachusetts, the idea that she has nothing to do with the case and is a private citizen is horseshit. She has everything to do with the case. Then a tabloid publishes these photos that purport to be of Ghislaine Maxwell eating at an In-N-Out burger in what people have identified from the streets in the background and so forth as being in Universal City, California, in Los Angeles. But the photos, if you hand them to anyone who knows Photoshop well, this person will tell you these are really, really badly badly faked. This is probably her head on someone else's body, or maybe her head and body, but cut out of one background and put onto another one. And there are odd things, like there's a wall that will repeat three times in the background. There's somebody's foot with no body attached, where another person has clearly been taken out of the photo. And I don't have any idea what the motivation for sending, I believe it was four fake photographs of her eating a cheeseburger in Los Angeles and reading, this is interesting, reading a book about CIA agents getting murdered. That was on the table and she was holding it in one hand in these photos. What the photos are supposed to prove, I don't know, unless she's...
There was some metadata in the photos as well, that, like, yeah, didn't it tie it to somebody's lawyer? So yeah, it was, I like, an official leak of some lawyer. Kind. It was, like...
Yeah,
from her people. Her yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think her lawyer's dog is in one of the photos. And so she's I don't know. It's not even clear at this point if Ghislaine Maxwell knew that those photos were being submitted or submitted them herself. And given the amount of photoshopping done, it's not clear, you know, how much of it is even her. But if she at some point was sitting there with a book, you know, How CIA Agents Get Murdered or whatever it's called, that would certainly suggest that she is trying to get a message across without appearing in public and making her location obvious.
Yeah, that's one way to read it. You know, It also, you know, is an answer to, I think, the original question, which is, why is this woman walking free? And perhaps Epstein's accomplice and the procurer of his trafficking victims, also as the former labor, you know, Trump labor secretary said of Epstein, belonged to intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah, I would not be surprised, and surely with the central role that that she had in his you know, circle, empire, whatever you want to call it, all the evidence that they found of what appear to be DVDs of, you know, famous and powerful and influential people engaged in sexual acts with minors. I mean, there's no way he would have one copy of those. Surely she's got everything he had. You know, surely she has a massive master copy of all his files.
So, but also, again, culpable in many of the crimes that he was charged with, if not all of them. So,
yeah, absolutely.
So, chargeable person, and yet is sort of allowed to put out a statement about how she's just returning to private life. She's in so many pictures with the victims and Epstein and other abusers who are very famous people, royalty and things like that. So here is I guess a question that is, you know, only alluded to in most news reports. It's never asked directly. So that one of the things I can do with this show is just ask questions like this. What are two possible intelligence, let's call them assets, doing running a child trafficking operation that blackmails some of the most powerful people in the world?
That's a good question. I would say first that it seems likely to me that the blackmailing or the running the operation may have started before the involvement with the intelligence organization. I don't know that for sure. I don't know if anyone left on Earth knows that for sure, but I don't think we should rule out the idea that he basically started this as a pimp and con man and then thought, oh shit, I better cover my ass. So went to the CIA and through them and Robert Maxwell, possibly to the Mossad.
Or perhaps was given to them, you know, because some law enforcement agency or another realized that this was a useful person to have.
Yeah, very possible too, yeah. And was sort of either offered or told, you're going to keep doing what you do and you're going to give as much, you know, evidence, physical evidence of this stuff as you can to us. I mean, if you're an intelligence organization, having a blackmail ability on virtually, well, I was going to say virtually every powerful person. That's not true, but a wide swath of extremely powerful people from countries all around the world and spanning, you know, government, industry, entertainment, all the major fields of public endeavor. I mean, surely that would be one of the most useful assets you could possibly have.
Sure. Well, let's just, I mean, just spell it out for people. If you have photos, video, whatever, evidence of someone committing a crime that could put them away for life, then you control that person, right?
Yeah.
So again, whatever the timeline or however Epstein and or Maxwell became connected to whatever any and all agencies they were connected to, who has access to what they knew or what they what evidence they created, and what are they doing sitting on it, right? I mean
yeah, I wonder if they are sitting on it. I wonder if what we're seeing in, you know, who knows, in politics, in business, whatever, isn't in fact the effect of their use of it already.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, people wonder, like, why are these Democrats acting so weird? I mean, yeah. Right? And another story that came out connected to this, I should bring it up because we're talking about threats. Graydon Carter, editor of Vanity Fair, widely respected, ran Spy Magazine before he took over Vanity Fair, which was sort of notorious for taking on not only Donald Trump, but all kinds of people with stuff that was sort of pushing the limits of whether you're flirting with a libel lawsuit or not. So, you know.
Notoriously ran bad food restaurants.
So Carter, a lot of sort of people are grinding axes about Carter now that he is no longer editor Vanity Fair, basically retired. But let's just say his reputation was not one for, you know, the guy that's going to pull punches or whatever. I mean, his reputation was the respectable gossip broker. And so what happened with Epstein is a reporter who had done a lot of very important early work figuring out who this guy was and that he was running this abuse ring. Although that was not, didn't make it to print. And it comes out very recently that maybe the reason for that was that Graydon Carter found a severed cat's head as well as a bullet at his home as soon as, you know, it became known to Epstein and his associates that they were going to go with a story that had certain details in it. And, you know, Carter, I mean, he basically denies that he was intimidated. He doesn't outright deny it, but, you know, and people are just kind of letting it go, but it's out there that this happened now, and you know, it raises all kinds of questions. Has anyone else who's ever dealt with Epstein found severed body parts or other such threats? You know,
this is also I think it bears mentioning, a group of people, meaning Epstein and his circle, who they like symbolism and puns, like a severed cat's head and a bullet. Curiosity killed in the same way. There's a photo that I would encourage you to look up if you haven't seen it already, from inside Ghislaine Maxwell's house, and it's a photo that I know about because of Matt Chrisman from Chapo Trap House, and as he said, when he saw it first, he thought, there's no way this thing is real, this has to be Photoshop. But he went and found the actual Getty Images, you know, watermark where you can buy the photo for use, and it's real. And it is of a wall in her house, and there's a guy standing at the bottom of the wall, like, you know, he's in a party or something. And maybe 10 feet up on the wall, there is this supremely evil looking human mask wearing a crown the mask looks wearable. It's not like an art mask. And it's got this rope gray beard hanging down from it. And then a kind of a smock, maybe, that you would put on if you were wearing the mask. And from what I understand, among the symbols that child molesters and pedophile groups often use are circles and triangles that invert on each other. Like if you look up the old logo for NAMBLA, it was a triangle that sort of went around into another triangle, into another triangle, getting smaller and smaller. And both the head of this awful mask and the sort of smock thing dangling down from it are covered in triangles inscribed in which are circles that keep reiterating themselves smaller and smaller inside themselves. It looks like a horrible costume you would put on to molest a kid, basically. It looks like the sort of nightmare garment that someone would put on to hide his identity while doing something like that. And this group of people, they seem to enjoy that shit. They like the high drama of it.
Well,
They
I don't
like
think it's just
costumes.
that. Somebody suggested this to me because another Epstein tangent was his connection to the whole transhumanist scene. He was a transhumanist, weirdly enough, and had all these connections to places like MIT Media Lab. I mean, he and one of his I guess, I don't know, accomplices, blackmail victims potentially, slash, well, whatever. One of the people he got to rape a kid, helped to rape a kid, whatever, however you want to put it, was Marvin Minsky, sort of the founding father of artificial intelligence and the star at MIT. Anyway, yeah, maybe Pinker. I mean, who knows? I don't, Pinker's sort of a lot. Pinker's alive and
Yeah, but
can
the evidence
sue, but
on
anyway, so the transhumanist connection. When I was working on some reporting for a story for the Baffler about cryonisis, people trying to freeze themselves to
Oh, yeah.
live longer. So huge overlap with the transhumanism thing. And there was a group connected to the cryonics scene where there were a lot of crazy allegations of, I shouldn't say crazy allegation. I mean, what, like out, like depraved, again, depraved, sort of like lurid allegations about people in the cryonics scene being predatory toward younger people that they were like luring to these events, basically, and trying to get them in the hot tub and then God knows what. I mean, there were some specific allegations about God knows what. But I didn't pursue it because it was just too weird. And like the places I was finding the allegations were too weird. And there were pictures of people with like, pentagrams and like vampire stuff. And it was just like, what are you, what is this? Like, and, I know it's sort of notorious for people who are like, at least I saw a couple of threads about from people who were like active in role-playing groups, like, and so like one story that everybody had that played Vampire the Masquerade was that there was some like 35-year-old creep around picking up like vampire nerd high school girls playing this game, right? So there is sort of like you can't just rule it out because people are dressed funny, right? You can't just say this isn't a thing, but it was all too weird, wrapped up with the Satanism. It was just like it was journalist repellent anyway, was the point of this. It was, and it worked. So it's not, obviously maybe some of these people have weird, part of their weird perversions or whatever is that they like the wordplay and, the mental aspects. But like all the extra weirdness, like that picture of Bill Clinton in Lewinsky's dress that apparently Epstein owned or whatever, like that stuff sort of works as, let's use a intelligence term for this. Well, or it's a successful misdirection because it makes it seem like this is too absurd to be real. And you can laugh about it. And there's, laughter is a really excellent way to change the subject. Anybody who uses it, humor is like a psychological coping mechanism, is aware of that. So I wonder if that's not part of the weirdness and the symbolism,
I think
in
that
some of
makes
those
total sense.
cases, yeah.
I wonder about the same thing, sort of in the on a very different level. This is not to confirm any of the goofy like Pizzagate or QAnon bullshit, but the way that people on a certain echelon of politics, it seems like especially high up in the Democratic Party, get into bullshit performance art and like bad modernist sculpture and shit. It's just sort of a cover for what it is they actually do all day, which is not nearly so lurid as the Epstein stuff, but it's just sort of it's something to talk about rather than to say, oh, I sit at a desk and I figure out how to fuck you, basically.
Well, that is that is the bigger evil, right? I mean, like this these crimes, like as you sort of started out this conversation by saying, who knows if anybody is going to be punished for this? I mean, Epstein is dead. I think the whole thing of like there was a bot, like that doesn't make any sense to me. It just seems it seems like, oh, since you mentioned Pizzagate, this is where I wanted to go with it. It seems like we're at the stage of this very messy parapolitical event and story where misinformation is flying all over the place. And I think that the best way that I know of right now to look at the whole Pizzagate QAnon phenomenon, and I don't have it in me to do a introduction. If you don't know what that is, then I'm surprised you've listened this long. the best way to look at that is as, potentially a way to confuse people about what we're learning has actually happened through the Epstein case.
Yeah, there's both here and in other disciplines, I suppose you could call them. And you'd see this over and over in like philosophy programs. There's a lot of hay to be made out of people who just figured out how the world works, that holy shit, this kind of thing really happens. If you can get someone saying that, the next thing is anything you want them to believe.
Pretty much, yeah. And it's, it's worked before, I guess. The idea of, having something so outrageous and improbable happen in full public view, that it defies belief for most people, and then you can really easily manipulate the people who do sort of stretch their assumptions to accept the facts because they've already gone so far outside of the familiar and in many ways the knowable that you can feed them pretty much anything. So.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember who said this to me, but somebody once said, "You ever notice how you never meet anyone who believes in one conspiracy?"
Well, yeah. But I mean, I like even if you accept the sort of the constantly now changing official version of whatever happened in the Epstein case, and I don't even know if the official version is now that he definitely committed suicide or what. Even if you buy that, clearly there was a conspiracy here. that is that. I mean, all credit to the Miami Herald for demonstrating beyond a doubt that there was massive corruption around this guy. And all the very interesting things we've talked about aside, that alone is reason enough for the powers that be to disseminate disinformation about this case. And we're seeing a lot of it. We're seeing a lot of it.
It scares me for them at the Herald, knowing what happened to people like Webb.
I mean, I agree. I agree. We've been going for a little over an hour. I think we should probably wrap it up. Any final thoughts?
Pizzagate is real. No, I'm trying to think if I have anything particularly interesting to say. I guess I would just emphasize the continuity of child abuse as the sign of ascension to the highest social sphere in so many places in so many times, and sometimes not even there is a perception of it wherein it's a crime and your ability to do it shows that you're immune to crime, and there is a perception of it in which it's sort of the ultimate kind of refinement for the ultimate sort of palate, you know, that's the kind of the ancient Greek view, or the view that you see. And I'm thinking right now of a number of hideous scenes in Fellini's movie Casanova, that, you know, in that particular social milieu, boys are like, yes, if you've moved past appreciating fine wine and fine food and fine music, you know, boys are the last refinement left. However, it's conceived of, the abuse of children so often dovetails with ascent to the highest social circle, and in this country, so often dovetails with experiments, especially CIA experiments and behavioral modification, that I just can't help seeing all those things dovetailing together in Epstein.
I think that that's all, those threads are pretty compelling, and I think eventually maybe we will know more.
The one person who I think actually might go down because he just cannot stop himself is Alan Dershowitz.
Yeah, and you know, that would be richly I think appreciated. Especially if, you know, the allegations against him are true, because they're pretty gross.
And I think he would talk. I think he's the kind of little fucking weasel whose first thought would be, I'm not going down by myself.
Well, that is what that it's. I mean, that's why so many of these people are effectively protected, because, again, they have all this dirt on one another. So, yeah. You know, that's kind of the, as you're talking about the rituals earlier, that's kind of a side benefit for being implicated in crimes that would put people away, I guess. If you're connected enough, you might be scary enough to enough people to keep you out of prison. And, you know, I just my sort of concluding thought is, you know, whatever happened with Epstein's death, I mean, if he was in fact murdered, my read on it, you know, my first take, which I still think is true, if you if you buy that theory, is that somebody's demonstrating complete impunity. I mean, he demonstrated impunity for decades, and so did most of the people that he supplied abuse victims to. And you know, if somebody gets away with his murder, they're demonstrating a kind of ultimate impunity. You know, they're clearly above the judicial process, the law enforcement apparatus, and whatever whatever allowed them to arrange that is, you know, it clearly some kind of connection that allows them to strike pretty much anywhere, at least in this territory. So that's pretty frightening. And even if that is not what happened, even if he killed himself, this takeaway is still impunity, particularly if more of his accomplices do not end up going to prison.
And let's be real, he didn't kill himself.
Look, it could be that the first murder attempt was so scary that he decided it was easier to end it. I don't know. I'm just trying to, you know.
Or the first one was, you know, you better take a plea deal, or, you know, or you will have an easier time if you're not here by the time we actually go to court.
I am trying to work from, you know, things that like don't require too much speculation. We speculated a lot, and that's fun, and it's, you know, it's part of the process of like trying to figure out what's actually going on. So, you know, I think it was great in that way. But as far as, you know, stating plainly what happened or didn't, like, I don't know enough. So, you know, that's how I sort of proceed through this. I will just say, you know, I've really enjoyed talking about it with you. Thank you for doing the show, you know, and let's do it again.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me. I'd love to come on anytime.
All right. Take it easy.